For CGLO News, I'm Jennifer Mizidor. Concordia University is marking its 50-year anniversary. Concordia was founded in 1974 when Loyola College and Sir George Williams University merged. Over the years, the university has expanded both its campuses and student body and now has 50,000 students, over 260,000 alumni. These alumni earn accolades such as Pulitzer Prizes, Academy Awards, and Olympic medals. The 50-year celebration has the theme Forever Forward, which promises to reflect on Concordia's past. Events will include a special website launch, video commemorations, and profiling standout alumni throughout the year. Concordia University athletes are raising concerns over the upcoming tuition hikes for out-of-province students. Out-of-province tuition fees will see a sharp increase this semester. Many athletes are worried that they will be unable to afford the additional costs, forcing some to transfer to other schools or give up their athletic pursuits altogether. The university has acknowledged this concern and is looking into ways to minimize the financial burden for affected students, but no concrete solutions have been announced yet. For many athletes, this tuition hike represents more than just a financial challenge. It could potentially disrupt their education and future opportunities in sports. On September 4th, a 14-year-old boy allegedly killed four people, two students and two teachers, and a school shooting at Apalachee High School in Georgia. Nine others were also injured during the incident. On September 6th, the suspect was arraigned on four counts of felony murder and is expected to be tried as an adult. His father was arraigned as well, and an arrest warrant alleges he provided a firearm to his son while knowing he was dangerous. Court proceedings are still ongoing and neither has entered a plea yet. For more, go to cglo.com/news or follow CGLO.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are live here on the Tommy John Show on CGLO 1690 AM. Hope everyone is having a great Monday. It's a absolutely gorgeous. Could not pick better weather today on Monday, September the 9th. And I've been waiting for this show in particular for a long time. A very long time. We do this show 12 months out of the year, every Monday, right here on CGLO 1690 AM at 12 o'clock. And we constantly talk about sports, because that's the name of the game on this program, but we're definitely a football-heavy show. Hockey and football is what we lean on the most, some NBA, baseball, but we wait for September constantly, and we wait for the National Football League to get going. Since last, what, February? Since this February, we've been obsessed with NFL storylines, new free agents coming in, contract negotiations, the rookies, how are they going to play? And we all wait for this first week of the season, the first full week of September. And it's finally arrived. It is here. We had week one in the National Football League. We had the first 3 weeks of college football. And we are truly back. Our radio show is truly back. Yes, it's fun saying, oh, how Caleb Williams is going to do in his first start. We can guess all we want. Now we know. Oh, like the Patriots are a three-win team. Well, we'll see. We'll see what they do in the field. Is Joe Burrow actually back? Are the Chiefs going to contend again? We can just make all these predictions all we want, but nothing matters until we actually see the product on the field, not in the preseason, in a regular season setting, starters versus starters, and it's finally here. We got it, and we have plenty of storylines and plenty to get to over the next hour here on the Tommy John Show. I am Tommy Lane, and let's get into it. We also have to talk about some U.S. Open tennis. The last major of the year wrapped up over the weekend. We had Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce there. Everyone was there. Lewis Hamilton, you name it. All the A-list celebrities, they were there at the U.S. Open over the weekend, so we'll get into that. And we're in crunch time for Major League Baseball. The postseason is less than 1 month away, and there's still a few playoff spots up for grabs. So we'll get into where all the teams rank, who has a chance of making the postseason, and of course, like we always do, some NFL and college football talk. So we will get into that over the next hour. So why don't we start off with a quick recap? Might as well start off with the U.S. Open. We have two, I don't want to say new major champions, because they have won majors before, but we have two new U.S. Open champions. And I have to say, I don't want to pat myself on the back here, but 2 weeks ago on this program, when the U.S. Open was starting, I said, run on a limb for the men. I said, it's either one of the big three, and if not, it's going to be a Medvedev or someone like that, because Medvedev was playing poorly heading into the U.S. Open. I mean, looked bad in Montreal, looked worse in Cincinnati. People saying, oh, he might be an early exit candidate. Played Sinner tough in the quarterfinal, so he played well. And, of course, Jannik Sinner winning the U.S. Open, his second major title. He won the Australian Open earlier in the year, and he won both hard court majors this year. He is a two-time major champion, so good for him. And the majors were split right down the middle. Two for Alcaraz, two for Sinner. And this is the new rivalry. We had the big three with Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic. I know Djokovic is still hanging around there, but it was a huge surprise when him and Alcaraz got bounced, each in the second round. No one was expecting that, but this is the new rivalry we got. We got Alcaraz, we got Sinner, it's here, and every match, I know it seems like Alcaraz gets the better when they play each other at Indian Wells this year, at the French Open, they played that five-set thriller that Alcaraz won. I think of the U.S. Open when Alcaraz won the U.S. Open 2 years ago, that, what, 5.5 hour match, 5 hour, 15 minute match, whatever that was, Alcaraz won. And of course, Sinner's got those in between. I think he has one or two wins against him. But this is the new rivalry we got. Alcaraz, two majors this year. Sinner, two majors this year. What, Alcaraz is four total. Alcaraz is only missing the Australian Open. And Sinner's only missing the two non-hard court majors. He hasn't won on clay, hasn't won on grass. I mean, Alcaraz made history earlier this year, the youngest player to win on all three surfaces. A Grand Slam, I mean, on all three surfaces. It's here. We were waiting. Who is going to be the new generation? We always kind of knew Alcaraz would be one of the guys. He was just always, he was a prodigy since he was 13. But Sinner, I mean, he he's turned to Darren Cahill, and I know he's got a lot of controversy with the doping, with the cream putting on whatever that is. All right, fair enough. Would I have given him a harsher punishment? Yeah, but it's irrelevant. Absolutely irrelevant. He played in the tournament and he won. So taking down Taylor Fritz in straight sets. Fritz was up a break in the third set too, had a chance maybe to take it to a fourth, but then Sinner kicked it into another gear, winning in straight sets. So yeah, the new rivalry's here. Sinner, Alcaraz, I can't wait. And we had a bunch of other great matches. Like, you had Zverev, and Fritz put on a great match. Tiafoe-Fritz in the semifinals was a great match. Just a great week, great 2 weeks for tennis. And on the women's side, we had Aryna Sabalenka, who I picked 2 weeks ago. I just said she was playing on another level. She just hits the hell out of the tennis ball. And she was just a buzzsaw this whole tournament. She takes down American Jessica Pegula, who was playing great. Won up here in Canada in Toronto. Made it to a final in Cincinnati. Falling short. 7-5, 7-5. Aryna Sabalenka, who's now won two majors as well. I believe she won the Australian Open a few years ago. So good for her. So those are the two U.S. Open champions. And the next major will be in the new year in 2025 when they head down under to Melbourne, Australia for the Australian Open in 2025. Major League Baseball. We got crazy wildcard races heating up. So we have the Yankees, Guardians, Astros leading their respective divisions. The Orioles and the Kansas City Royals firmly in playoff spots, but then the Minnesota Twins are coming back down to earth. They've lost three in a row and now are only in the wild card by 3.5 games because the Mariners and the Tigers, who have played much better of late, are right there. The Red Sox are not playing good at all. They're still four back, but the Tigers and the Mariners right in that wild card race trying to catch Minnesota. We head to the National League, the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Philadelphia Phillies and the Brewers are chilling as their division leaders, but you got to watch out. The Padres aren't that far behind. The Diamondbacks aren't that far behind. I'm not talking about win the division, but people might get complacent about playoff time. These teams are dangerous. These are very dangerous teams. And not to mention, we got two teams vying for that last wild card spot. It's the Braves. It's the Mets. They are both at 78 and 65, tied for the last wild card spot. It's going to be an intense last few weeks to see who makes the postseason between those two teams. We'll get into baseball later on in the hour. College football, and man, what a weekend we had. You looked at the slate. The big games you were highlighting were Michigan, Texas, Colorado, Nebraska, but we got a whole bunch of headlines. Utah, the 12th team in the country, taking down Baylor 23-12. Texas going in to Ann Arbor, facing the defending national champions, albeit not the same team, but the school that has won more college games than anyone historically. The defending national champions, and ran them over 31-12. What a game for Quinn Ewers. Three touchdowns, over 240 yards passing, very efficient, 24-36. Gunnar Helm had 98 yards receiving and a touchdown. Just an all-around beautiful performance by the Texas Longhorns. And Davis Warren, that's been the big issue, quarterback for the Wolverines. Only 200 yards passing and two interceptions. He did have a touchdown late, but irrelevant. The biggest and most heartbreaking upset of the week, Notre Dame, after winning on the road at Texas A&M, come home and lose to Northern Illinois 16-14. Riley Leonard was awful for the Irish. 163 yards passing, two interceptions, not even a touchdown passing. And just like that, Notre Dame crashing down. We'll get into the Fighting Irish later, and I'm saving myself for that topic. Oregon, the number 9 team in the country, winning. They were ranked 7, now dropping to 9 because they won a thriller at home against Boise State, 37-34 on a last-second field goal. I watched the end of that game. Man, Oregon, the first 2 weeks, Idaho, they win by 10. Boise State plays them close. A lot of teams said they were the best team in the Big Ten. I don't know about that. They got to figure some things out. Dylan Gabriel is one of the Heisman favorites. I mean, he was efficient, 18-21, but only 243. And you look at the numbers that Miller Moss is putting up at USC. You look at who's the kid up in Georgia? Beck, he's putting up unbelievable numbers. I mean, there's a lot of people in the Heisman conversation. Cam Ward from Miami, he went for 300 yards and three touchdowns. Everyone told me Dylan Gabriel's going to the Heisman. Not saying he won't, but he's got to play better, and Oregon's got to be better. I mean, that Idaho and Boise State, you're squeaking out wins at home. What are you going to do when you play Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan? Something to think about. Nebraska rolls over Deion Sanders, Colorado Buffaloes, 28-10, their first win in 4 years over the Buffaloes. And Colorado's got to shape up. They won barely their first game. They got Colorado State next week, then Baylor, then UCF. So they have easier games on the schedule. But you never know. They got that O-line got bullied. Shador Sanders never had time to throw it. It wasn't a pretty sight for the Colorado Buffaloes. Louisville, 49-14, the number 19 team in the country. They get the win. Georgia wins as well. Miami of Florida, 56-9 over Florida A&M. Number 4, Alabama, cruising over South Florida, 42-16. Ohio State, the number 3 team in the country, 56-0 over Western Michigan. No surprises there. Clemson, 66 points on Appalachian State. What a day for Cade Klubnik. 378 yards, 5 touchdowns. He was 24 of 26 as the Clemson Tigers, the number 22 team in the country, bounce back after the Georgia loss. Tennessee dismantling NC State. Not even close. 51-10. The number 7 team in the country are cruising right now. USC. Lincoln Riley's getting his boys to play, and that defense looks scary. They shut out the Utah State Aggies 48-0 as the number 11 Trojans improved to 2-0 and are definitely in the hunt in the Big Ten. The Oklahoma Sooners, 15 team in the country, they beat Houston close 16-12. And the other big storyline we have, Ole Miss 52-3, and Boston College ranked in the top 25. They beat Duquesne 56-0, and that sets up a battle on the road at number 6, Missouri, 12:45 on Saturday. That game I cannot wait for. Now the big one before our break, the National Football League returned. Week 1 is almost in the books. We have the Jets and Aaron Rodgers at San Francisco tonight. That is the final game of the week, kickoff at 8:15 p.m. on ABC. But we'll just do a quick recap of the scores. The Chiefs kicked off their 2024 season with a win, 27-20, as they look to win a historic 3 Super Bowls in a row on Friday. The Eagles win a great game. People call it clumsy. I was very entertained. 34-29, the Eagles win. But it comes at a cost for the Packers. My God, not only was losing enough, Jordan Love, MCL sprain, out 3 to 4 weeks. But Adam Schefter thinks it might be a bit sooner than that. So that's at least a little bit better news for the Packers. Was an ACL tear, not out for the year. 2 to 4 weeks. For Jordan Love. Big game from Saquon Barkley, over 109 yards rushing, 2 touchdowns, also caught another one in the air. Fantastic game by Barkley and the Eagles. The Buffalo Bills, no Stephon Diggs, no problem for Josh Allen. He was incredible, 18-23. He had 2 touchdowns in the air, not to mention him on the ground. He had 2 more, 4 total touchdowns for Josh Allen. The Bills, 34-28 over Arizona. Kyler Murray, decent, protect the ball, didn't throw for over 200 yards, though. Good game by Buffalo. They will have a short week, though. They're at Miami on Thursday. The Steelers with Justin Fields because Russell Wilson was injured, 18-10 over the Falcons. They start off their season with a win. The New England Patriots in a huge upset over Cincinnati, 16-10. New Year, same Giants. They get blown out by the Vikings, 28-6. New Year, same Carolina Panthers, 47-10. They get dismantled by Derek Carr and the Saints. The Colts lose a very close one to Houston. They played great and tough, but ultimately C.J. Stroud and the Texans were too much, 29-27 over Indianapolis. Caleb Williams' first game as a Bear did not go well for him on the stat line, but still a win, a big comeback win for the Bears. They had a block kick, pick six, you name it. Every position, every phase of the game mattered for the Bears. Special teams, defense, they did it all, 24-17 over the Tennessee Titans. Tyreek Hill, after getting arrested earlier in the day, he makes the game in time and he scored an 80-yard touchdown to help the Miami Dolphins take down the Jacksonville Jaguars 20-17. In the late window, the Seattle Seahawks 26-20 over Bo Nix and the Broncos. The Jim Harbaugh era starts off with a win for the Chargers 22-10 over the Las Vegas Raiders. In Tom Brady's broadcasting debut, he had Dallas and Cleveland. Dak Prescott earlier in the day getting the largest contract in NFL history. 4 years, $240 million, $231 million guaranteed. And they rolled. Deshaun Watson looked terrible, which we will get into. 33-17, Dallas over Cleveland. The Washington Commanders and Jaden Daniels, the new era started in Tampa Bay yesterday, and it started with a loss. Although he played pretty decent, Baker Mayfield put on a show for all Buccaneers fans. Four passing touchdowns, almost 300 yards passing. The Buccaneers, 37-20 over the Commanders. And the big one on Sunday night, which was a terrific football game, Jared Goff and the Detroit Lions taking down the Rams 26-20 in overtime. That last overtime drive, they leaned on Montgomery and Gibbs, ran the ball down their throat, and their throat, I mean the Rams, and they ended up winning 26-20. And that was our last game of the weekend. And until tonight, we have the New York Jets and the San Francisco 49ers at 8:15 on ABC. So the reason I spoke fast, we got to get to a break. When we come back, we'll talk about what I liked and did not like from the first week of the NFL season, as well as what is going on with Notre Dame after their loss to Northern Illinois. I'm Tommy Lane for Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors.
Have you just arrived in NDG? Do you want to learn French? Are you looking for a job? Would you like to get to know your neighbors better? Since 2012, Bienvenue à NDG has been welcoming people newly settled in the neighborhood by offering support to orient themselves, integrate, and feel at home. Supported by the NDG community, Bienvenue à NDG is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to facilitate the integration of immigrant persons into the community life of Notre-Dame-de-Grâce, as well as into the host society, and to promote intercultural relations. Our services are free, and we can serve you in more than 20 languages. Join our community. Feel free to visit our website, bienvenuendg.ca, and make an appointment with our integration counselors, in partnership with the Government of Quebec.
If you enjoy genres like slowcore, post-hardcore, noise rock, math rock, shoegaze, or anything like that, tune into Past Tense, 9 p.m. Thursdays on CJLO. It also airs 9 p.m. Mondays on luradio.ca and 9 p.m. Wednesdays on cfrc.ca.
Here on the Tommy John Show, playing some Kendrick Lamar, because he was announced as the halftime show for the Super Bowl in New Orleans in February. As a big Kendrick Lamar fan, I'm very happy about that. But we're a long ways away from the Super Bowl in, not in months in real world, but in football terms, we have a long way to go. We have still one more game in week one tonight, which I cannot wait for. Maybe the biggest game of the weekend based on offseason storylines. If you think about it, not just from the Jets and Aaron Rodgers, everyone thinks that's where I'm going. Oh, Aaron Rodgers. Yes, that is a monster storyline. But you can argue San Francisco has had even more of a gong show of an offseason. I mean, he had the whole Brandon Ayuk contract thing. Then when that was done, they had to get the Trent Williams contract situation done. Not to mention the rookie wide receiver, Ricky Pearsall, shot last week after he was struggling in camp. Then that happens. And then it's just constant storylines from the 49ers. And then, of course, Brock Purdy's going to want a new deal. He's making $800,000 a year. And when he saw Dak Prescott get $60 million a year, and he's never made to a Super Bowl, a player who's 0-2 against Brock Purdy, Brock must be thinking, you know what, maybe I'm not going to get $60 million a year, but it's definitely starting with a 4, probably a 5. You know, like, Brock Purdy ain't taking anything less than $45 million. He ain't. So, he must be licking his chops. But it's a huge game for San Francisco because we've seen so many times teams that get to the Super Bowl are so close and then they lose and they're just not the same the next year. Look at Atlanta. I know they made the playoffs next year, but they were not the same team. They were no threat to anyone the year later. We're not. I mean, the Patriots team was an anomaly. But you look, San Francisco, the year after, you know, Bosa gets hurt, Garoppolo got hurt, everyone got hurt, they missed the postseason. Just go through Philadelphia last year. I know they started 10-1, but then they fell apart at the second half of last year and got demolished in that wild card game. You can look at the Kaepernick 49ers. You can look at Seattle. When they lost that Super Bowl to New England or going for back-to-back, they were not the same team. That was the end of the Legion of Boom. Carolina with Cam Newton. They lost a Super Bowl. We're not the same. Not the same. It happens. But San Francisco now, this is their second go-around with this roster. And Kyle Shanahan is the head coach. They've had the Super Bowl loss, had the down year, built themselves back up, made a conference championship game, and then, all right, we're back in the Super Bowl. And they got closer. They were closer this time around. They had a lead with a minute left. And they had a ball in their hands, in their possessions, in overtime. Now, would I have let Kansas City take the ball first and know what I had to get? Yes. But they didn't. That's old news. The Chiefs win the Super Bowl again against San Francisco. Got to go back to the drawing board. You just do. Now, is it the team's fault? Like the roster? No. That team is loaded. It's probably the best team on paper still in the league. I mean, you can argue Baltimore, maybe. You can argue Detroit. But if you look at player per player, star per position, I don't think anyone comes close to the 49ers. Like, no one. But I will say is this. If the Niners get off to a poor start, it could be a really bad season. Really bad. The reason I say that is how many more times can a team come that close, like that close to winning a championship and not, and then just turn around, all right, let's do it again. It takes a lot out of you. And that first Super Bowl appearance was how many years ago? 2019? 2020? I think it was 2019. So it took them 4 years to get back. New quarterback, but still George Kittle, still Warner, still Bosa. They added McCaffrey, still Deebo Samuel. But the roster's the same. I heard today on ESPN, they're bringing back all 11 starters from the Super Bowl on offense last year. No excuses. You have one of the great offensive minds. If they do not get off to a good start, it could go down very badly. Look at the Rams. After they won the Super Bowl, they started off poorly, and it continued, and they had one injury, too, and their season was over. You look at Carolina the year after. They lost the Super Bowl. Not a good start, fell off. The Niners need to get some good vibes back in the building. And yes, they're going to be confident. They were in the Super Bowl last year. But for some reason, I don't know why. I mean, the Rams won. They won the Super Bowl and had a Super Bowl hangover. I never heard of that. But you look at the teams that don't get off the good starts after losing a Super Bowl, usually doesn't go well. So the key is San Francisco, if they want to be competitive, I'm not saying they have to win tonight, but if they go through the first 4 weeks and they're 1-3, uh-oh, that's not a good sign. You want to get back on the right foot immediately. And if you win tonight against the Jets, it starts things off on a good note. You want Brock Purdy to show improvements. You want McCaffrey to look healthy. And more importantly, you want to make sure that Brandon Ayuk has no rust. He didn't play a lot of training camp because of the whole contract thing. He ended up staying in San Francisco. Does that have any impact? There was a huge offseason for San Francisco. Huge. Like, monstrous. They were leading the headlines every day. Usually that's a Cowboys thing. It was the Niners 24-7. It's Brandon Ayuk. Trent Williams. Ricky Pearsall. Brock Purdy. Okay. Is McCaffrey healthy? Which is, oh my God. Now, that's one side of it. The other side of it is the New York Jets for tonight's game. Aaron Rodgers. We've been waiting pretty much exactly a year. It's going to be a year on Wednesday, right? Since he last played a game. And I don't even count that because he played 4 snaps and we all know the rest. Achilles blown. Jets season blown. And here we are. So technically, Aaron Rodgers hasn't played a full game of football since what? January of 2023? Right? I'm trying to think. Maybe December? And what's really a big deal for the Jets is they're so talented. They've been talented for 3 years now. And they've done nothing. And what does that come down to? The most important position, I feel like I've said this 100 times on this program, quarterback. You can have a great defense. You can have a great O-line. You can have everything in the world. If you don't have a just competent quarterback play, you're not going anywhere. Competent. The Patriots yesterday, they got competent quarterback play. Their defense won them the game. That's it. How many times last year or in the last 3 years have the Jets had competent quarterback play? Maybe 5 times. And they won those games, I tell you. When they had competent quarterback play, when Zach Wilson played not even to his number 2 overall standards, just not turning the ball over, the Jets would win games. Yet, it never was consistent. Never was consistent. And we could point fingers on why that's the case. And why Zach Wilson didn't pan out, forget it. They didn't scout well. I mean, is he better than Trey Lance? He's played more than Trey Lance. So it's not like it was the 2021 class or 2020 class and you passed on a Justin Herbert or a Jordan Love or whoever. It was not a great quarterback class. Maybe you could, like, it's like Mac Jones, Fields went after him. So it kind of softens the blow of the Zach Wilson pick. Yeah, I mean, you could have had a Kyle Pitts or a Jamar Chase, but still. You have Garrett Wilson. You have everything. Now, Aaron is healthy. And to me, if Aaron Rodgers is healthy and not a locker room killer, then this team should win 9 games, 10 games, easy. If that defense is what it usually is, there's no excuse. There's no excuse. The real question is how is Aaron Rodgers going to look? Because we haven't seen him, like I said, since, let's say, 2 years. We haven't seen him play a full game. And, you know, how is he going to react to the New York media? I mean, there's so many different storylines for the Jets. But my main storyline, I know it sounds basic, is can they get competent quarterback play? And what I mean by competent quarterback play is no turnovers, number one. Number two, move the sticks once in a while. And number three, be smart situationally. The amount of times at the end of a game where Zach Wilson would just have to take a sack and he would throw the ball away. People are like, oh, he didn't want to take a sack. No, dummy, a sack would have been better because the clock would have kept moving or something like that. The amount of times that happens in New York Jets, I cannot even. It's outrageous. Aaron Rodgers, much as you can say at how bad of a person he is or how much of an egomaniac he is, you can see all those things, and I won't argue with you. I don't know Aaron personally, obviously, but what you hear in the media, I mean, he's not Mother Teresa. Let's just say that. But one thing you can say about Aaron Rodgers, he's a Hall of Fame quarterback, the best thrower of the football ever, like natural thrower of the football, and he didn't turn the ball over, and he's very smart situationally. And what else does Aaron do? Just found a way to move the sticks. As much as he can throw the beautiful 50-yard pass, Aaron was notorious of moving out of the pocket, finding the right receiver, just move, finding a way to move the sticks. And the best thing Aaron Rodgers ever, done in his career, and maybe the best stat he has, is his touchdown to interception ratio is the greatest of all time. He does not turn the ball over. He doesn't. That's what he's notorious at. He will not turn it over. Once in a while, it will just naturally happen. But Aaron Rodgers, by a mile, has the best touchdown to interception ratio in the history of the NFL. Not close. And that's really all the Jets need to be competitive. When I mean competitive, I mean borderline playoff, winning record. If Aaron stays healthy, the Jets should win 9-10 games. Just because that's all they need. If the defense is the same and Robert Saleh has coached the Jets like he has the first 2-3 years, however long he's been there, all he needs from Aaron is not turn the ball over, understand the situation, and move the sticks. Hello? Aaron doesn't turn the ball over. He will take a sack instead of throwing the ball away if he knows the clock's going to move. He will do that. He's been in the league for 20 years. I mean, if Aaron Rodgers is half of who he was 2 years ago, the Jets are a playoff team, in my opinion, with that schedule, with everything. Now, the real question is, that O-line, can they keep him healthy? Remains to be seen. And is he the same quarterback at 40 and not playing in 2 years? That is remained to be seen. Those are the two big question marks. But if he is, or even half the quarterback he is, the Jets should be fine. The Jets should be fine. Will they win tonight? I don't know. The Niners are a damn good football team, and I think they're going to come out and play. But it's irrelevant. This is what the hardest game they'll have all year. At San Francisco opening night, Aaron Rodgers not playing in 2 years, coming off a torn Achilles. This will be the hardest game they play. The Jets can win 9, 10, 11 games easily if Aaron is who he is. If Aaron's just normal Aaron, or even a bit less. I'm not saying like a Peyton Manning last year Denver decline, then no. But if he's 75-60% of MVP Aaron, then they'll be fine. That's all they need. In New York, the Jets, considering what they had, they were winning 7 games. That should be good enough. Can't wait for that game tonight. The main takeaways of week one. Cincinnati, man, these slow starts. Unbelievable. As a Patriots fan, I was going nuts. But is it just they don't like playing football until they think the regular season starts in October? Like, it's crazy. Their September record, they're awful. They're awful. Like, they last year they lose at Cleveland. 2 years ago they lose, was it Pittsburgh? I mean, it's ridiculous. The Bengals, this is the easiest game you're going to get. Now, the Patriots are much better than people realize when I say that, I mean people thought we're going to be a rollover. They're going to score 40 points. It's going to be hard to score 40 on the Patriots. That their defense is really good. Really, really good. Now, their offense, not that. They played exactly how I wanted them to play yesterday. Run the ball. You have a good running back in Stevenson. Control the clock. Just convert on third and shorts and win a close game. That's how they're going to win games this year. Brissett's not throwing for 350, 400. That's not who he is. He's going to throw anywhere from 120 to 200, one touchdown, you know, like 18 of 28. That's who he is. But the Bengals, that is a terrible, terrible loss. I know T-League Higgins didn't play and Chase had food poisoning and didn't play because of contracts. But come on, like, let's be real here. That's not a good... And you got the Chiefs next week? That's not... You had to get that game. You start 0-2 again. It's going to be the same conversations. And that O-line, how many times am I going to hear the Bengals fix the O-line? Are you kidding me? He was getting sacked left and... left and right, just getting sacked. Oh, the Bengals finally fixed their O-line. Really? They did? I didn't notice. They draft this kid from Georgia in the first round. Why isn't he playing? It makes no sense. I'll never understand it. I'm not saying the Bengals aren't going to be a playoff team. I think they are, but can they ever get off to a good start? I thought that's why Joe Burrow played some in the preseason, so they can get off to a good start. Start the year off right, be 3-1 instead of 1-3. Oh, no. Oh, my God. Now, the story will change if they go on the road at Arrowhead and beat the Chiefs. Then it'll be like, they're back. Okay, fair enough. But as we're sitting here right now, at home against the Patriots, I bet 90% of people in their survivor leagues around the world picked the Bengals at home against the Patriots. Ugh. Either that or Carolina. You got to pick against Carolina, man. This is like a little speed round. I just want to get through every game, and then we'll get into my main stories. Carolina, my God, are still the same pile of you-know-what. Now, I like the hire of Canales. I thought he did a great job with Baker Mayfield last year. But, man, Carolina are just awful. Just awful. You didn't even get a quarter of them in that game. It was the first. It felt like 2 minutes in, and they were down 7-0. It's like the first drive of the game, Bryce Young throws a pick. It's like, we can't get anything here. Awful. They need to blow that whole thing up. That might take years. Literally. I don't know a good player they have. I like the tackle, Brown, defensive lineman, Brown. But he's injured. Bryce Young, I mean, I know we got to give him some time, but my Lord. Carolina, I mean, it's not all his fault, but Carolina might be the worst football team I've ever seen. Might be. As we sit here right now on a gorgeous Monday afternoon, they might be the worst football team in America. Like, Georgia could beat maybe Carolina. That's how bad Carolina look. It's shocking. Week one, and they already gave up. They knew what they had. They're like, oh, we're mailing it in. Unbelievable. They looked so bad, and I feel so sorry for the 10 Carolina Panthers fans there are in the world. Like, oh my goodness, that is dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. And they're going to try and spin it, oh, Bryce Young has no talent. Then get him some. He had a whole offseason. All this cap room, I thought. They did nothing. They bring in Canales, and it's like, oh, fairy dust. We invest in the offensive line a little bit. Where was it? My God, did they stink. And it doesn't look like it's going to get better. It doesn't. I mean, they're so bad. They're so bad, it's crazy. Now, I want to know how long Canales' leash is. Same with Brian Daboll. Like, those two guys, I think they're good coaches, but those rosters are so awful, it's scary. Like, Brian Daboll, I feel so bad for him. That's the other team. My three losers yesterday are the Bengals, just for losing to the Patriots at home. Carolina, the Giants. And I'll add a fourth. You'll hear my fourth. But my goodness, the New York Giants are just awful. Terrible. I'm going to keep listing. Just keep listing. That's what the New York Giants are. An embarrassment. It's another one, embarrassment. They gave Daniel Jones $160 million to be their quarterback, and they let Saquon Barkley walk, and then you see Saquon Barkley behind a competent O-line and goes for over 100 yards, 3 touchdowns. Thanks for coming. Jalen Hurts played awful, and the Eagles still put like 30-something points on the board because Saquon Barkley is arguably one of the 3 best running backs in the league now, and the Giants just let him walk. I understand that, we don't want to pay a running back, but when the running back's the only good player you have, you might have to pay him. They have nothing. They have Malik Nabers, who's a rookie. That's really what they have. I mean, I like their defensive line. I like their front 7. Besides that, they freaking stink. They really stink. They're better than Carolina, but I don't know how much. That will be a terrible football game if they ever play each other, and I will not watch a second of it. But that is just awful, awful, awful from all 3 of those teams. And the worst one of them all, I think, is Cleveland. You gave Deshaun Watson $230 million, all guaranteed. Not to mention, to get him, you had to give up 3 first-round picks. I remember looking at it last night. Was it 2/3 and a 4th for Deshaun and like a 6? That is the worst trade in NFL history. And look at Houston now. They hit on C.J. Stroud, who's outrageously good. And they're back. And Cleveland, you know who they would need right now and who would win them a lot of games? Baker Mayfield, who they had. Baker Mayfield in Tampa Bay. They would give up 3 first-round picks, 2/3 and a 4th for Tampa Baker Mayfield right now to get him back. I bet my life they would. Because Deshaun Watson, to say he's looked awful since coming back and playing in the NFL, that's the biggest understatement of all time. He's been the definition of a disaster, of a dumpster fire. He cannot do anything right. He fumbles the ball, throws picks left and right. And when he's not accurate, the one thing is, the one thing you know we're going to get from Deshaun Watson's accuracy. Are you kidding me? He can't hit anything. He's missing receivers by 6-7 yards, just airmailing it. It's awful. And they gave him all this money, invested all that draft capital, and the team's ready to win now. They have a top 5 defense. They got a good offensive line. I know there were some injuries yesterday, so they weren't as good. But you got Njoku. You have Amari Cooper. You have Elijah Moore. You have Jerry Jeudy. You're going to have Nick Chubb in 3 weeks, and he still stinks. Still stinks. Some could argue he's worse than last year Deshaun, which is saying a lot. Last year Deshaun was awful. He's getting worse. He looks like Russell Wilson his first year in Denver. That's what he looks like. He looks like Rex Grossman. That's what Deshaun Watson looks like right now. And it is bad. And until 24 hours ago or 30 hours ago, when Dak Prescott got his new contract, he was the highest paid quarterback in guaranteed money in NFL history. He got $230 million guaranteed, and he has guaranteed money for the next 3 years after this. 3. So my biggest loser is the front office of the Cleveland Browns. And you know what? You knew everything that came with Deshaun Watson, all the baggage, and you were so desperate to win, you didn't care. And you said, we're going to go get him anyway, because if there's a top 5 quarterback in the league at his age on the market, I don't care if his baggage, we're going to go get him. There's a higher power somewhere who said, no, we can't allow this scum to be a good quarterback. Like, there must be. How is he this awful? Some could argue he's a worse quarterback than human being right now. That's how bad of a quarterback Deshaun Watson is. He is unwatchable. Unwatchable. And that team is very good. Stefanski won 2 Coach of the Years in the last 4 years. They got great coaching, top 5 defense. They had the best defense in the league last year. And Joe Flacco led them to the playoffs. And Deshaun Watson comes in and they look like a JV high school team. I don't know what's going on. What on earth is going on? So my biggest loser is the Cleveland Browns organization for investing in this loser and giving him $230 million all guaranteed. And you have to pay for the next 3 more years. Even if he benches. There's people today saying they should start Jameis Winston. They're going to have to pay him guaranteed money for the next 3 years to maybe be a backup at $48 million a year. Good Lord. Good Lord. We'll have one final break. I'm going to come back and give you my final thoughts on the NFL and Notre Dame football. That's next here on the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors.
At Cinema Public, we offer a theatrical program made up of local films and international new releases, classics and little-known nuggets, as well as short films and family screenings. Our tickets are among the cheapest in Montreal, $10 for a regular entry or $8 for students, children, and seniors. We also offer 6 ticket movie cars for even more savings. Come see us at Casa d'Italia, just across from John Tolon Metro, and visit cinemapublic.ca to discover our programming. Le Cinema Public for a lively cinema.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6!
All good beginnings. Need some variation. Tune into REVC with me, Maxwell. It's something different every week. Mondays at noon on CJLO 1690 AM.
Back here on the Tommy John Show. So we're just going to quickly recap the last few games. So obviously I told you I thought of Cleveland. I think that was more about Cleveland than Dallas. And people thought Dallas would stink. Like, oh, miss the playoffs. I don't think Dallas is that bad. Dak's a good regular season quarterback. My whole thing was you're going to pay for a guy who's significantly worse in the postseason. In the regular season, you know what you're getting from Dak. You've had 8 years of knowing he's going to win you 11, 12 games. So yeah. Great. But are they going to compete for Super Bowl? No. But everyone's saying they're going to miss the playoffs. I do not understand that. Unless there's some significant injuries or something goes really wrong. You know, Mike McCarthy and Dak Prescott and that defense, they're going to win a lot of games. I don't think they're going to win a Super Bowl. They're going to win a lot of games. Other takeaways, the Packers, I mean, they look good. That injury, I mean, I would be cautious with that. I know they want to throw away the season because that Malik Willis, like I said, even I was watching my buddies, I said Malik Willis is one of the worst quarterbacks I've ever seen. And I'm being harsh today, but I feel like I have to. We're being too nice to some people. Like, like Malik Willis, I'm sure he's a nice guy, but he's not a good quarterback. I'm sorry. And it's just the way it goes. You gotta find a way to just get through these next few games. You cannot rush a quarterback back off an MCL sprain. You do not want to make it worse. You got Indianapolis, Tennessee. Maybe you get him back from Minnesota. But you need him for down the stretch. Your easier games are down the stretch. try and make a push for the postseason. You're not as good as Detroit. I saw it last night. When the Lions want to play physical like they did on that last drive and run the ball down people's throats, they're going to run the ball down people's throats. And Jared Goff, when he has play action, when he has time to throw, is a top 12 to 10 quarterback in the league. I've been saying that. But yeah, the Packers, I mean, it's interesting. They just need to get Love back because Willis stinks. Philly, Hurts, Jalen Hurts has not looked good. He was trying to give Green Bay that game away. Threw two awful picks, one in the end zone. That awful, awful fumble at the goal line. Thank God they recovered it. Not good. Pittsburgh, Justin, I mean, that's more about the defense. I'm not concerned about Atlanta. Atlanta's going to win a lot of games. Their schedule is very easy. Kirk Cousins, first game back from the Achilles. He'll bounce back. He's going to bounce back. He's not a great postseason quarterback, but one thing Kirk Cousins will do, he'll win you 9-10 games in the regular season. So Atlanta will be back, but I'm telling you, Pittsburgh, they're going to win 9 games. That's what they're going to do. Houston, Indy, I think these are two great teams. I think Indy's going to make a run for the postseason. Shane Steichen, Zach, good of a coach. Anthony Richardson just hasn't played a lot of football. That's all. The Bears, listen, Caleb Williams didn't play well, but he's going to be good. I'm not worried about Caleb Williams. He's going to find himself. That defense and special teams, though, man, are they good. So they're going to be competitive in a lot of games. Miami, Jacksonville, I think these are both two good teams. Jacksonville will be kicking themselves for losing that game. Etienne fumbling on the one-yard line when they're about to really put that game away. It's just the little things Jacksonville has to tighten up. They locked up Lawrence. He's their quarterback of the future. Doug Peterson's their coach. Their defense looked much better, so I think Jacksonville will be competitive. Seattle, listen, flawed. I think Seattle's flawed. They got a good defense. Denver, Bo Nix did not look good at all, but that's a tough environment on the road. Your first game playing in Seattle, that's brutal. Chargers, I said, they're going to maul people. That's their O-line, their physical. They were close with the Raiders, and eventually they broke them down, and then J.K. Dobbins just took over running the football. Those holes, he was gashing through the Raiders defense in the fourth quarter. And that's what the hardball teams do. They're just physical. It's close for 2.5-3 quarters. Then they pull away. And that's really what it is. Rams and Lions, those are two of the best teams in the NFC going at it. Stafford can still play. Nacua injury, that's a big concern. But Cooper Kupp, man, he hasn't lost a step. What, he had 14 catches last night, over 100 yards, touchdown. They're going to be very good. And in Tampa Bay, Washington. Listen, Jaden Daniels looked okay. He's taking a lot of big hits, which was my concern for him. Just don't take too many big hits. And Baker Mayfield playing really well. So I cannot wait for week two. We'll recap that next week. But I just want to end the show talking about my Notre Dame Fighting Irish and that awful display they put on Saturday. I came in to this week, a lot of confidence in Notre Dame. This is the third year under Marcus Freeman. I'm trying to remain positive. Like, you know what? We finally won a big game on the road. Our hardest game of the year was week one at Texas A&M. Hard place to play. We win the game. I'm pumped. This is a new era of Notre Dame. They ranked us at 5. And I thought that was a bit high for us from considering where we were right now. And then you have Northern Illinois at home and you lose. And it's just, this story happens so many times. There's the Marshall loss under Marcus Freeman. Like, that was a bad one. There's the Stanford loss after beating Clemson. There's so many just awful losses. And I don't want to say Marcus Freeman's on the hot seat, but if he sticks with Riley Leonard, they might be. He is just a terrible quarterback. He cannot throw. Why? You see that the receiver was open on the second pick that cost him the game, and he underthrew him by 10 yards, maybe more, and it's just awful. And at Notre Dame, one of the preeminent college programs in the country, for you to have that quarterback play is unacceptable. And hopefully this is a lesson for Notre Dame. No more of these fifth-year transfers. No more of these. Build up one of your own quarterbacks. The last time they had a good college quarterback was Ian Book, and he was a Notre Dame guy. Notre Dame through and through. And no, he's not a good NFL quarterback, but in college, he was good. He was solid. Way miles better than Riley Leonard. But Notre Dame, that was one of the most embarrassing performances I've ever seen from a college team, ever. Northern Illinois at home, 28.5-point favorites, and you lose. unacceptable. They're ranked 18th. They should be unranked. They still might get into the playoffs, and that's Notre Dame privilege. But if Marcus Freeman does not make a move, does not put in the backup Angeli, then I don't know what to tell him. He'll be packing his bag soon. And I like Marcus Freeman, but that was an unacceptable loss by the Irish. Unacceptable. That is it for our show. We're back next Monday. We'll talk about week 2 of the NFL and college football. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time.
You're listening to CJLO 6.